it goes on, he gives his permission, and he goes and starts his fighting, and he does get a few people down until the enemy gets him down. And of course he calls for his uncle to come on him. It's amazing that a child at that age could have courage like that, that can actually go out there with 40, 50 year old men, younger, older than that, and say, "I am Qasim ibn al-Hasan," which they betrayed. Ali Akbar, of course, is the oldest son of the Imam.
His morals were a reflection of his grandfather. His intellect was a reflection of his grandfather. Ali Akbar used to always insist, even as a young man, he used to say, "Allow the poor to come and eat from my hands." Yet what type of generosity did he face on the 10th of Muharram?
After the companions had all gone and fought their battles and became shaheed, Ali Akbar was the first to go and ask permission to go and fight. So no one would think that the Imam or the children of Imam think themselves as higher than the rest.
He comes to his father to seek permission for him to leave. You see, with all the other family members of Imam Hussein, his nephews, his brothers, his cousins, with all of them, the case was that Imam Hussein would not grant them permission at the first instance. They would come back, they would plead with him, they would beg him, and only then would the Imam give them permission. The only exception was that when Imam Hussein saw his own son Ali ibn al-Akbar come into the tent and he asked him for permission, the traditions say that Imam Hussein gave him the permission instantly. He didn't wait for him to plead. He didn't wait for him to besiege the Imam for permission. He gave him the permission straight away. It's his own son, and the Imam is there in order to offer a sacrifice.
He hugs Ali Akbar and then asks Ali Akbar to go and speak with the woman of the camp, with his mother and with his auntie, for it is the final hug he would give a mother and the final hug he gives an auntie.
So he went and fought a great battle and killed a lot of the enemy. And he returned to his father.
And he tells his father again, he says, "The heat of Karbala is killing me." What words does his father have to offer as consolation, apart from saying to his son that, "My son, within a few moments your grandfather will give you water from the pool of Kawthar."
He said his farewells to his father again and went and fought. And it's been said in history that he was hit one of the most. Okay, there were a lot of people fought in that battle, but some of them were hit the worst and mutilated. History says that they say about him. He says, "Attaguhu, irban irba." They more than mutilating. They really cut him to pieces. Sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Eventually, Imam collects his son's body. Narrated in a hadith, Imam Hussein looks towards Najaf and he says towards Najaf, towards where his father is buried, "Oh father, you are the one who lifted the gate of Khaybar, yet you never had to lift a spear from the chest of your son. Come towards Karbala and see me lifting the spear from the chest of my son Ali Akbar."
Abbas was the flag bearer of Imam Hussein Ali.
He was like the backbone of the soldiers who went to defend Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
He was known as a warrior. When the battle started, he would want to go and fight. Abi Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam would not allow him and said that, "You are the backbone of this army. You need to stay alive." When the companions all went and fought, he wanted to go again. He wasn't granted permission. When the Ahlul Bayt wanted to go, Bani Hashim, he came again and he was still not granted permission. And after a number of people had gone, and the majority of Bani Hashim was even gone, maybe a few of the smaller ones were left, Abbas came again and asked for permission. It was not granted.
The Imam kept saying, "No, how could I let you go when you are the bearer of my standard? How could I let you go when you are the chief of my forces? How could I let you go when you are the one holding my flag? You represent the hopes of all the family members. You represent the hopes and aspirations of all my daughters and the women and the children. How could I ever let you go? How could my tongue ever give you permission to leave?"
On the day of Ashura, they had not had any water. That hot day, it was a summer day. In Karbala, very hot. And it's very dry too.
Abu Fadl al-Abbas hears the pangs of thirst of the children around him. Amongst those children is his niece, Sukaina, who pleads for water.
These children have not had water. So they're starting to have their cries. They've been having them since maybe early noon. And this is continued until late afternoon. So they come to Abbas and ask, "Uncle, we want water." And they're crying to him. So when he came to the Imam and asked again to go to battle, the Imam saw these children crying. He said, "You can go and get them some water."
Now the Imam, remember, gave him a specific mission. He didn't ask him to go and fight the enemy forces. He didn't ask him to go and defend Imam Hussein's life. He said, "If you have to go, go and get some water."
Abbas comes forward. He tells Sukaina, "I will go now and I will bring you the water." He goes towards the Euphrates.
Abu al-Fadl Abbas wasn't out there to fight. He was out there with a mission, and the mission was to bring back some water. He goes to the battlefield. He pushes away a huge cavalry of the enemy forces from the water, from the river Euphrates.
They realized that they can't get him. So what they decided was that they were going to wait for him to come back. In the meantime, go and hide between the trees, behind the trees. So when he comes, they can take him by surprise instead of coming in front and start fighting.
When he approaches the water, he enters the cool waters of the Euphrates. No one would have blamed Al-Abbas centuries later when we recall and recount his story. No one would have blamed him. No one would have said, why did Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas drink from the water? No one would have said Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas should have waited until his brother had a drink before he did. No one would have said that.
When Hazrat Abbas took water with his hands, he wanted to taste the water. Then he remembered Sakina. He remembered the children who were with him, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He threw the water.
He recognizes there are children who are thirsty. He recognizes there is a leader who is thirsty. He recognizes there is a sister who is thirsty.
The most magnificent act of sacrifice and selflessness was displayed at that moment on the day of Ashura. History has never witnessed a moment of selflessness as that displayed and expressed by Al-Abbas on that day.
When he was coming back, carrying the water, the enemies were here, ready to attack him.
He chose the shorter distance, which was through the trees, the date tree.
But then came the enemy and they cut his right hand.
So he puts the container into his left arm. Another person from the left comes and takes that arm out too. But he is fighting his way to get to the camps and do what Imam Hussein asked him to do, which is to get the water to the children. So he puts it in his mouth, which is the last option that he has to hold. And he's continuing his way towards the camp. And one of the enemy realizes his plans and he shoots an arrow into the container. The water starts spilling. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas has lost hope of going towards the camps. Some history books say that he changed his path.
Along the way, he is showered with arrows.
All was in his mind is his imam, as well as the children who are waiting for the water.
He can hear Sukaina's words. He can hear Sukaina's cries. He can hear the cries of the other children.
He was not going to face the children. He because he had promised them water. He was not going to go back without water. And at the same time, someone from the back hit him on the back of his head.
Abbas fell first onto his face to the ground before he let the standard fall. Because, as we said, the standard represented all the hopes and aspirations that the women and the children and Imam Hussein held on that day.
He fell to the ground and he started calling for his brother. He said, Ya Akha, Adrik Akhak.
And when Imam Hussein alayhi salam saw him on the ground, he came fighting against the enemy. When he reached him, all that Abbas could say is that, tell Sakina that I couldn't bring the water. When he passed away, you could see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam felt the pain, and that at that time he said, really, my backbone has been broken, when he saw that Abbas, Hazrat Abbas, has been killed.
The greatest sacrifice in Karbala, one may argue, is the sacrifice of a six-month-old. Imam comes forward in the heat of Karbala. Abbas and Ali Akbar and Qasim and Muslim and Habib and Hur may all have been able to control their thirst to a certain extent. Yet how does one expect a six-month-old to go without water or to go without milk? Yet we find Imam comes forward and shows the people that, look, you may want to come and kill me, but surely you are not arrogant enough to kill a six-month-old. I may want to protect the message of my prophet, but the six-month-old is coming forward just looking for a drink of water. Imam wanted to symbolize to the whole world that these weren't people who were seeking to protect Islam. For the people who seek to protect Islam are not those who would ever massacre a six-month-old.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam took Ali al-Azhar Abdullah radiyah to the battlefield and said, look, if you think that we, the grown-up, have some sort of thing to be punished for, can you tell me about this innocent infant who did not commit any sin? There's no fault at all. He didn't do anything.
Saying that says, if you think I will drink of the water, I will put Ali Asghar on the sands, these hot sands of Karbala, and then you give him the water. And as Imam Hussein places him on the floor, you see Ali Asghar's dry tongue come out. And this pulls the hearts of some of the people in your position.
In an act of pure evil, Umar ibn Sa'd, the general of Yazid's army at Karbala, gave orders to his main archer, Harmallah, to strike the six-month-old son of Hussein, Ali Asghar. The irony being, the arrow used to pierce the neck of the infant was one that was more commonly used to kill wild beasts. Hussein, by now, a broken man, with the deaths of his close family members, struggled to break the news to his wife, Rabab, the mother of Ali Asghar. He walked back and forth from the tent of Rabab, calling out, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Surely we are from God, and to Him we shall return.
He does this on 7 occasions. The people ask, why do you do this? He replies by stating, I do not know how to tell a mother that her six-month-old has a neck which is completely pierced. Imam had allowed men who were able to control their thirst to go before Ali Asghar. Yet he wanted to show the world that even a six-month-old is a symbol for justice. A six-month-old is a symbol of sacrifice.
These words, the martyrdom of the last soldier in the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Hussein was now alone. His companions had been killed. Abbas, his backbone, had been killed. His nephew Qasim had been killed. his son Ali Akbar had been killed. And now his youngest son Ali Asghar had been killed. The following is a brief account of the last tragic moments of Hussein's life.
Imam Hussein advanced towards the enemy, raising his sword, losing all hope of survival. Abdullah ibn Ammar said, "Never have I seen someone surrounded by a huge number of enemies and whose son is slaughtered, and so are his family and companions, and who still maintained his composure, remained relentless and stayed courageous more than Hussein." He said, "I am the one who is fighting you, and women are not held accountable, so keep your robes away from them and stop them from harming my women as long as I am alive." Then he bade his family farewell for the second time, ordering them to be patient. He put on the outer mantles as he said, "Get ready for affliction, get ready for tribulation, and be advised that Allah Almighty shall protect and safeguard you." The ladies who were raised in the lap of prophethood